When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places. Welcome to Forward Thinking.
Hey there, and welcome to Forward Thinking, the podcast that looks to the future and says, how does it feel to be one of the beautiful people? I'm Jonathan Strickland.
I'm Lauren Vogelbaum.
And I'm Joe McCormick.
And if you were listening to our last episode, you realized that we were talking about space babies. Making babies in space.
Babies in space.
Yes.
Yeah, with the fact that, I mean, if we're going to space, we're going to have to make new humans there sometime.
Yeah. Barring some form of immortality, we will definitely, in order to continue the human species, need to make more babies. And as it stands, there are some big challenges in the way, some risks out there, and we aren't completely aware of all the consequences those risks may have.
Right. So we wanted to talk about what are some of the challenges we're facing in terms of making babies in space, and how might we overcome them? Last time we talked about radiation.
Yeah.
There's lots of radiation in space,
yes.
Both of a different nature than the radiation we usually encounter here on Earth. And lots of people have suggested that this poses a risk to pregnancy in space. Suggested that probably with good reason, right?
Right. I mean, radiation is one issue, but today we wanted to talk about another thing that we really are just starting to understand when it comes to its effects on organisms. I'm talking about microgravity.
Yeah. So what happens when you take a pregnant animal and put it in space?
It pretty much freaks out.
Well, I imagine, yeah, it does freak out. But what happens to its health and the health of its children?
So we have a little bit of information about this, but not a wealth of information, right? Because we don't have any examples of mammals conceiving or giving birth in space. We have some other animals that have conceived in space. We'll have a lovely, inspirational story about a cockroach later on in this podcast.
But, and jellyfish. Don't forget about the jellyfish.
I like to call them jellies, rather than jellyfish, because a friend of mine works at the Georgia Aquarium and would get on my case if I said anything else. Gosh, you should see what happens when I call him starfish. And I'm not talking about starfish. I'm talking when I call jelly starfish. He gets really mad. But anyway, yeah, we don't have a lot of information about what microgravity's effect would be for humans. I mean, humans having a baby in space, we don't really know. We're starting to study it, and it looks like microgravity could have some pretty extensive effects on
some
development.
Pretty serious and potentially completely unexpected.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there is evidence that you can subject pregnant animals to space, and they can still give birth.
Yep.
And do all the stuff like babies. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
It can happen. The question is, what are the total effects and what causes these effects?
And it can be really tricky to even come to those conclusions, right? Because you have to take into consideration a lot of variables, some of which may not have anything to do with the animal being in microgravity. You know, there are a lot of genetic markers that you have to take into consideration. This is why it's really complicated whenever you look at any study that deals with development in this case, because there's so many things going on that narrowing it down to saying microgravity causes this can be tricky. Although there are certainly some experiments that we'll talk about that seem to have some pretty dramatic
insightful
results.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, for example, there's one that you cited. I think you found the study, Joe, about a study where they didn't actually send cells up into space. They used a device to simulate microgravity in doing in vitro fertilization for mouse eggs.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the idea was to find out what would the effects of microgravity be on that. And in fact, in this case, we're talking about a 3D clinostat as the device. Now, what a clinostat does is it rotates along at least one axis. 3D would rotate on multiple axes, but rotate on at least one axis so that gravity would equally affect all parts of whatever it is you're testing. The idea being that it all cancels out in the end. So, for example, I saw a lot of experiments that they essentially used a second hand on a clock, because usually it's like one revolution per minute for these experiments. So second hand on a clock is, that's exactly what you want. And they would affix seeds to some sort of substance that would allow them to grow, you know, some sort of soil substitute attached to the second hand. And the idea being that because it's rotating around and all different sides of the seed are being exposed to gravity equally, it's the same as microgravity. So you got to understand that we're simulating it in this case. It's not true microgravity. It's because it's tricky to actually get time aboard any kind of scientific study that's going up into space. That their time is really precious.
But hey, if you want to subsidize your trip to space, you might want to see if there are any scientific organizations that will pay you to conduct these experiments while you're up there.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the tricky things is that if you are to harvest egg cells, they are only viable for a short time after you've harvested them, right? I mean, you can freeze sperm cells for a really long time, but egg cells for mice, you know, you pretty much need to use them quickly in order for them to have a chance of producing live
offspring.
To remain
viable.
Yeah.
Right.
So, if, you know, being able to harvest those egg cells and then immediately get them aboard a spacecraft that immediately can launch, which, by the way, then exerts hypergravity on everything. Because,
oh, yeah.
Which is a whole other set of problems.
Yeah,
or
going,
potentially solutions.
Right. Well, but at any rate, you don't really know what the effect on the cells was at that point. You could say, though, was it the hypergravity that caused this effect or the microgravity later on that caused this effect? But in other words, it's just really hard to get the cells you need up into space long enough to look at the effects of microgravity. I mean, you could do a parabolic arc flight on a plane.
But that doesn't really last long enough to perform the experiments that you want to do.
You're talking about like 90 seconds of weightlessness. It's not enough for you to be able to really have any meaningful data.
Right.
So that's why they used the clinostat here on Earth to kind of simulate microgravity. Now, in that case, when they did this experiment, the scientists discovered that the fertilized eggs that developed into embryos and then eventually developed into live offspring, like the mice that were born were fine. They took the fertilized eggs and they implanted them into mice that carried the live offspring and then gave birth. However, it was a much lower rate of live offspring than the control group. So, and they discovered that the longer the cells remained in microgravity, the less viable they would become. So you'd see something like a 17% live birth success rate compared to the control groups, somewhere around like 50%. So that suggests that at least for mice, and at least in the simulated microgravity, there could be some issues with embryos developing.
With the ability to get pregnant.
Yeah.
More recently, just last year, there were a bunch of articles coming out trying to link this recent paper from the University of Montreal research team to the possible effects of microgravity on humans. Now, what this study was about was plants, actually.
Unless you know some certain humans that I know, don't tend to really be equivalent to people.
Right, okay. So it was referred to as cell wall assembly and intracellular trafficking in plant cells are directly affected by changes in the magnitude of gravitational acceleration. So in a lot of popular reporting, basically people cited this study, which found that different gravitational effects affected the plants not just on a macro level, but on a cellular level. So the ability of the plants to do this process called intracellular transport, sort of taking materials through the cells, sort of the traffic flow at the cellular level of materials, that was disrupted by changes in gravity.
And obviously in any early organic development, that would be incredibly important.
Yeah, it would. And there is some parallel because some of these same intracellular transport processes happen in humans.
Sure. I mean, stuff like proteins have to get in between different cells, stuff like that. And there was evidence in one bit of research about fruit flies reproducing in microgravity that a protein transfer process was being affected. But we'll talk about that in just a couple minutes.
You know what, Lauren? No. I don't want to wait. I don't want to wait to find out what happened to those fruit flies in space. I want to hear about it right now.
Right now?
Right now. there was some form of issue with the way that these cells were being able to exchange proteins. How is that going to affect the fruit fly? I mean, what does that actually mean?
It means it will die terribly of fungal infection.
Whoa, this got dark fast, Lauren. Yeah, it's funny.
It's just fruit flies. It's okay.
Well, fruit flies, as it turns out, are really useful for these kind of experiments. In this case, when we're talking about the proteins that are being exchanged that helped with being able to do things like resist fungal infections, it's a big deal. They did discover that bacterial infection, that immune response was fine, right? The flies were not more susceptible to bacteria, but they were more susceptible to fungus. They had not developed that defense against them.
Right. And the important thing to note here is that humans and other mammals have really similar immune systems to fruit flies. One of the Nobel Prizes in 2011 was actually won over the discovery of this. This particular study, not the one about the immune systems, but the one about the fungal infections, was done on the Space Shuttle Discovery. And for some reason or another, and one of the projections is that it might have been protein transfer problems. The immune systems of flies that developed in space were different.
Yeah, and also, if they were under hypergravity instead of microgravity, but they're raised in a centrifuge, essentially, it was discovered that they had boosted resistance to fungal infections and still no affected there was no effect on their bacterial resistance.
Might you say that they had created a superfly?
I would, in fact, say they created a superfly.
Of course you would.
I know I would. I am just sad that I didn't say it first.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So we've talked about how microgravity might affect a developing fetus, but what about mothers? Like, would a pregnant woman have any particular risks associated with microgravity? Well, I only know of one fact that might inform us on this, which is that in 1983, the Soviet space program sent up, they were like, well, let's see what happens to a pregnant rat in space.
Of course they were.
So they sent the pregnant rat into space for several days, and their observations in the end said that the mother seemed to suffer more than the offspring. that basically the mother gained less weight than you would expect from a pregnant rat, and had decreases in muscle mass and liver mass and hemoglobin.
Oh, I think the muscle mass and I feel like hemoglobin are two common things that happen to astronauts just when they're up in space, not pregnant at all. Mm-hmm. You certainly are going to lose muscle mass from not using your skeletal structure the way that you would under the effects of gravity.
You're not under the resistance of mm-hmm. gravity. Yeah,
and bone mass also decreases, stuff mm-hmm. like that. And whether or not that would be a significant impact on a pregnant woman and whether or not that would in turn impact the fetus is definitely a thing to think about.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's a huge concern. And obviously, again, a pregnant woman undergoing the stresses of both hypergravity, assuming that the conception happened on Earth, and also then microgravity, these are now big things to consider and really hard to test for.
Yeah.
You know, just like we were saying with the radiation episode, developing tests that would allow
us to simulate this.
We'd have to be able to simulate it in some way so that we could gain more information and have the best practices. But, you know, it raises lots of ethical issues.
Well, let's look at some actual practical examples of animals born or conceived in space.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
How about cockroaches? You mentioned them earlier.
Yeah. Fantastic. This cockroach was named Hope.
Was named Nadezhda. I don't speak Russian.
Nazdrovya.
Nadezhda, which translates to hope.
Right.
And I believe that this cockroach is, as far as I know, it's the first animal to have conceived in space.
At least has admitted to it.
Yeah, they got pregnant in space. So yeah. It was a 12-day space mission, September of 2007, conducted aboard a Russian satellite by the Institute of Biomedical Problems.
I love that it's the Institute of Biomedical Problems.
Uh-huh.
They don't have solutions, just problems.
Hope conceived a brood of 33 little cockroach babies, which hatched later after they returned to Earth. So how do these space-conceived baby cockroaches hold up? So there was first an early report in October of 2007 in Novosti, the Russian newspaper. And it said that they were eating and drinking and seemed healthy, but the researchers noticed an accelerated darkening of the carapace, which usually remains translucent longer in juveniles.
Yeah.
And then there was a subsequent report in January 2008, again from Novosti, which quoted the lead researcher here, Dmitry Atyakshin.
Yeah.
And so here is what was reported. Accelerated body and limb growth. The ones conceived in space could crawl faster than the average cockroach, and they were, quote, much more energetic and resilient than the others.
So this is terrifying.
Right. So let me get this straight. Microgravity makes fruit flies vulnerable to fungus, but turns cockroaches into super cockroaches.
According to this report, I don't know.
So 33 little baby cockroaches are the result of this mad science experiment
conceived in space.
Right.
The question is, does the line end there?
Yeah, what happens with the next generation, Joe? Are you telling me that there are super duper cockroaches running around Russia?
No, so Hope's children, number one, not sterile from the procedure. So conceived in space, fertile on Earth.
She's a grandmother.
Right.
It's very sweet.
A batch of 30 plus little critters of Hope's grandchildren. But I haven't read any reports of them carrying over the super-duper traits that were initially reported. And I have to admit, for some reason, I just feel a little bit skeptical about the super cockroaches. But, you know, maybe.
Yeah, actually, the reports I read specifically said that the grandchildren of Hope were indistinguishable from our ordinary, boring Earth cockroaches that continue to give me the heebies and the jeebies.
There's of course a difference between genetic effects that happen to a person's somatic cells, their body cells, mm-hmm. and the genetic effects of something that happens to their reproductive cells.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe we'll see that it skips a generation and the great great grandchildren will end up towering over Kiev.
Well, they're cockroaches, so I'm sure there have been several generations since then. I'm not sure what happened to them.
Mm. Oh. Terrifying.
Though it's worth stating that this is not the same as a mammal conceiving in space and then having grandchildren.
Absolutely not.
Not even for lawyers.
No, these are cockroaches. They're not mammals, and that really does matter. Mm-hmm. Like, cockroaches are known to be fairly resistant to radiation. That's something we talked about in the last episode, was the risk that radiation poses. And I imagine, while microgravity obviously is a big factor here, radiation was probably the main risk for the cockroaches giving birth to sterile children.
Sure.
But so we know that the roaches got past it.
All right. So we've talked about the cockroaches. Do we have any other examples of critters what were either born or conceived in space?
Well, we mentioned not jellyfish, but jellies.
Jellies.
Moon jellies.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Aurelia aurita. So not conceived, but born in space. Maybe not born-ish.
As much
so
as jellies are born at all, they're kind of polyps, and then they sort of
Basically, a polyp separates into what's called ephorae, which are like larvae.
Yeah.
And these were timed before and after launch. So there was a study published in 1994 chronicling what happened here. Jellies spent 9 days aboard the space shuttle during their ephorae and polyp stages, and then they were returned to Earth. Now, what's interesting here is that jellyfish have graviceptors, these organs that receive fields of gravity,
so that they can tell which way is up underwater.
Right. And there are these little hairy pockets containing calcium sulfate crystals, and that helps them orient their bodies with respect to Earth's gravity.
That would become, I mean, anyone who's ever been underwater and then gotten disoriented knows how crazy, confusing, and scary that is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, right, sure. And in humans, it's an inner ear fluid issue, I think.
Yeah.
So, you know, having this kind of organ is very important for animals that need to be able to maintain their orientation at any given time under the water.
Yeah.
Or anywhere.
Right.
Well, for jellies, under the water is pretty much where you want to be.
Yeah. That or in space.
or
in Jonathan's bed.
Oh, please, no. No more jellies in bed. My wife has already yelled at me for peanut butter in bed. I don't need jellies in there, too.
Okay, so the study found that the jellies that developed in space were, quote, morphologically very similar to the ones from Earth. So basically, you look at them, you don't see a big difference.
Right.
They seem pretty healthy, but what were observed were, quote, pulsing abnormalities. So the ones that were born in space, and that just means you see like a jellyfish pulse through
right,
the water.
Sure, yeah.
Like the contraction movement that propels it.
So their movement, their mechanism for movement had changed.
Yeah, the pulsing abnormalities were found in about 18.3% of the space developed larvae, whereas the controls back on Earth, it was just 2.9%.
Oh, wow.
So it was definitely observed that the ones that were sort of born-ish, if you call that born, whatever, in space, had troubles with orientation and with their gravity organs.
Mm, interesting. So, yeah, I mean, that, now obviously that would be different for humans than jellies. I mean,
yes, absolutely.
But the implication is that when you have such a different environment than the one that we've evolved to interact with on you know, in our regular lives, the outcomes can be unpredictable, right? We don't necessarily know what's going to happen. I mean, you know, if we are evolved so that we can deal with a certain amount of radiation and a certain amount of gravity, then when you take us out of that scenario and then try to reproduce, there could be some big issues. And that's really what this is all about, is, you know, how do we find out what those are? How do we address them? How do we prevent them? In fact, that's what we should really talk about. How do we prevent any problems from microgravity possibly interfering with our reproductive cycle?
Well, we could just go to a planet with accelerated gravity, give birth to all children there, and then they'd all be superhumans, right?
So Krypton type thing.
Right,
know?
Right, with a different color sun so that we all get cool.
We have to be able to absorb that energy, and then
real science.
We can fly through some mechanism that has never been adequately explained.
I like this idea. Let's not even discuss any others.
Okay, well, we kind of have to. We have to be thorough.
Well, I mean, of course, the other one would be a big one for humans in space in general, which is artificial gravity.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have that on all of those fancy Star Trek programs and basically everything else that happens in space and sci-fi ever.
Yeah, you just got to make sure you flip the switch. And as long as the switch is on, you're good to go.
how would you actually create artificial gravity? Well, we won't go into too much detail because we'll probably do a whole episode about this in the future.
Yeah, there's ways that you could simulate gravity, although there are questions about how effective that would be. So essentially creating the whole centripetal force and centrifugal effect by rotating whatever spacecraft you're on along an axis so that you can, you know, create an artificial kind of gravity that way. But there's some debate about how effective that would be. Then there's always the, well, all we have to do is figure out what the heck gravitons are and then harness them to our will and we're fine.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that sounds easy.
Perfect.
Let's prove this hypothetical thing exists. And then second, we have to find a way of manipulating it. And then it's all gravy. But yeah, I mean, these are real problems. I love the idea that in the future we have like a planet set aside that's kind of like those motels where you rent by the hour. That's just where you go when it's time for you to, yeah, for babies. That's the space baby motel. Is that one planet? That planet's gonna have a great reputation.
Well, the joke you made actually does raise good questions because a lot of what's still to be determined is with these two major risk factors, radiation and microgravity, we don't know exactly the duration and the stage of development where these are most important.
Yeah.
So, like, it may be that there are only certain times when it's really important to avoid these things, mm-hmm. and that other times, you know, that a fetus might be just as resilient as an adult.
It could be negligible, yeah.
Right.
We don't know yet.
Like with the kind of radiation that we are exposed to on Earth, knowing that the first trimester is really where it gets into kind of scary danger territory, but during the second and third, you're more or less okay.
Yeah, who knows? What if we were to find out that you can be pregnant in microgravity as long as you give birth in a gravity environment? Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that's true. That's just one example
just a conjecture.
Of weird things mm-hmm. we could find out.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't know. I mean, it is interesting, especially when we do look at the effects that microgravity has had on adults out in space, it certainly raises some questions. Things like the fact that, you know, muscle mass and your bone mass deteriorate over time. It makes you wonder how would that develop in a new life form. I mean, these are big questions and we don't have the answers yet. And like we've been saying, you know, developing a way of addressing these questions ethically is that's a big trick. You know, it's tough. It's one of those, you know, areas of study that I expect is going to take some time for us to really get a handle on.
Yeah. The moral of the story is if you're one of those people who really, really loves babies and you really, really love space, you need to get to work on artificial gravity and active radiation shielding.
Yep. So get back to us because we'd be really interested to hear about your work.
Definitely.
And in fact, that leads me to another thing I wanted to address. Go to fwthinking.com. It's a great website. No, seriously, you should go. It's actually, that's where all of our podcasts are. It's where our blog posts are. It's where our videos are. We talk about a lot of stuff in a lot of different ways. So if you enjoyed the podcast, go check it out because I think you're going to find a lot of stuff there that you'll really enjoy as well. And then you can tell us about how much you enjoyed all that stuff by going to Twitter, Facebook, or Google+ and looking for FW Thinking. We have profiles on all of those social platforms, and we'd love to hear from you. And meanwhile, we will talk to you again really soon.
For more on this topic and the future of technology, visit forwardthinking.com. Brought to you by Toyota. Let's go places.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Business. It's all the things that keep this world turning. And behind every one of these companies is a partner helping to keep it all moving. It's why the local flower shop and your favorite pizza joint, the startup in the stadium, hospitals and hotels, banks and restaurants nationwide, all choose the advanced network, cybersecurity solutions, and round-the-clock trusted partnership from Comcast Business, the company that powers more businesses than anyone else. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Restrictions apply. Call or visit comcastbusiness.com to learn more.